Welcome to the Farm of the Future podcast, brought to you by Raise in association with Innovation for Agriculture. The podcast explores how farm businesses can prepare for and adapt to current and upcoming challenges affecting agriculture. In this podcast, we'll delve into everything from decarbonisation solutions to increasing farm biodiversity, always considering the impact on farm businesses, the people working on farm, as well as also the benefits to food production and the environment. I'm Natasha Smith, and today I'm joined by Aaron Redman, Natural Resources Advisor at Innovation for Agriculture. For this episode, we're joined by Alistair Leek from the Allerton Project to talk about regenerative root crops. Alistair was the winner of the 2023 Raise National Agricultural Award, which was presented in recognition of how he has developed the Allerton Project to demonstrate how farming can deliver food production and environmental outcomes simultaneously. So Aaron, root crops are obviously a really important part of the food system, but they do present some unique challenges in terms of how they're produced. I'm curious about your thoughts on growing root crops in regenerative farming systems. Is it kind of attempting the impossible given the amount of soil disturbance required?
Thanks, Tash, and hi to everyone who's listening today. I think it may be a difficult challenge, but I don't think it's an impossible task to tackle. Root crops are conventionally require significant soil intervention to promote high productivity. This could be from destoning to seedbed creation, and there is significant soil disturbance on harvest. So therefore, although it's hard to minimalize soil disturbance when it comes to root crop creation, other soil health principles can be built upon. This can include intercropping and incorporating large diversity within rotations, leaving long rest periods, and building soil organic matter either side of the root crop rotation. But luckily today, we have the person who's best suited to explain regenerative opportunities from crop rotations and root crop production.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing more from Alistair on what he's got to say about it.
Hi, Alistair. It's great to have you joining us for today's episode. Before we dig into the work that you've been doing at the Allerton Project, could you just talk us through the unique challenges associated with growing root crops?
Yeah, root crops present a particular challenge to farmers who are trying to adopt more regenerative practices. In arable rotations, we've moved away from the intense reliance on ploughing, which was traditional. So I'll take you back to 1999, when a survey of tillage practice was carried out here in the UK, and we found that 90% of arable farms were using the plough to establish their crops. Over the next period, over the next 5 or 6 years, there was intense interest in adopting what we call minimal tillage. And the phrase conservation agriculture became very popularized with the formation of the European Conservation Agricultural Federation, which was a group of farmers from across Europe who were trying to switch away from ploughing. And by 2005, more than 50% of the land here in the UK was subjected to minimal tillage. And we were rivaled in that switch by only one other country, and that was Finland, where they have a short period between harvest and permafrost, and therefore being able to establish crops quickly is the challenge. So those of us who have made this switch, and I suspect we're more like 80 or 90% of farms are now practicing minimal tillage, have seen their soil carbon levels increase. And that's good. It's good for the resilience of the soil. It's good for growing crops and so on. But one thing that we know destroys that soil carbon is intensive tillage. So if you're lucky enough to have a soil which lends itself to growing root crops, carrots, parsnips, potatoes, then ploughing will be required to grow those crops, and that will have a detrimental impact on all that hard work that's been invested in improving the soil quality.
Mm.
And conventionally, what sort of landscape is required to grow root crops? So what sort of soil types, and do they require freely draining soils, or do they need wet conditions?
Well, root crops really benefit from well-drained soils of grade one and two. That's traditionally where they're grown. On this farm here, traditionally, potatoes were actually grown on some of the better land, and we are mostly grade three, hand-sloped Denchworth clays. You wouldn't grow root crops here now because we don't have the scale of operation to be able to do that. And so the growing of root crops tends to be concentrated on the better soils, and particularly in the east of the country, although there has been quite an expansion in parts of the country, including Herefordshire, actually, where dairy operations have switched over using the good quality soils, Herefordshire and Shropshire, actually, to grow root crops. But yes, traditionally and currently, better soil types, definitely.
Okay. From my understanding, there has been a great interest from brands such as McCain's, as well as retailers, to use regenerative agriculture as a solution to UK food systems. Could you tell us a little bit about the work that you've been doing at the Allerton Project to investigate how root crops can be grown in a regenerative system?
So, two of the principles of regenerative agriculture are to minimize the amount of soil disturbance in growing crops, and secondly, to protect the soil surface through the growing of cover crops or crop residues, basically trying to avoid leaving the land bare. And unfortunately, root crops are crops which traditionally we have grown from bare land with a great deal of soil disturbance. So you can see that both of those are counter to the principles of regenerative agriculture. But we need our root crops. Are an important part of our diet. So we need to find a way in which we can integrate the growing of these crops within rotations. So my principles really go back to, well, actually to the Middle Ages, the Norfolk four-course rotation, and the rotations which are adopted by organic farmers, which work on exactly the same principle as the Norfolk four-course rotation, which is that you have a period in which you restore the fertility to the soil, and then you go through a period in which you exploit that fertility and deplete it. And then you go back to a restorative phase and then a depleting stage. And that is the basic principles of all rotations. And what we want to do within a regenerative agriculture system growing roots is to create exactly that mirror, which is to have a phase ahead of the root crop in which we're restoring soil structure and fertility. We then go through the damaging exploitative period, and then we come back into a restorative period. And the main objective of any rotation should be, for any farmer, is that at the end of the rotation, the soil is in better condition than it was at the start of the rotation. And if we're achieving that, we are constantly will be improving our soil.
Okay, I see. So, like with any kind of agricultural system, it is a flux. So over that time period, there are years where the soil health is increased, and there's years where it may decrease. But overall, on average, it's a regenerative outcome.
Yeah, that's what you're aiming to do. And then, of course, within the exploitative period when you're growing your root crops, there are things that you can do to mitigate the severity of that damage being done. So, for instance, if you're growing potatoes, these are normally planted in the spring. So you will have a period from the previous autumn, assuming we've come from a previous crop situation, whereby we can grow a cover crop perhaps through the winter time, which will build soil organic matter ahead of the potato crop. Or if we're in a rotation in which we have a lay period, we might follow the lay period with the crop of root crops or potatoes. In that case, we will probably keep the lay through the winter and only destroy it in the spring, so that we're minimizing the time in which the soil is left bare, growing the root crop.
Okay, so how many rotations do you guys tend to work on?
Well, the truth of that does depends what else is in the rotation and what your soil type is like. So some soils will restore themselves more quickly than others will. The lighter soils are quite difficult to push carbon into. It tends to mineralize very much more quickly. So if you are growing root crops on sandy soils, the restorative period may take a great deal longer. Now, you can restore the soil fertility through a number of means. The rotation is one way in which you have those restorative crops within the rotation, which are putting organic matter back in. But in sandier soils, that would be quite difficult. So what you might choose to do there is to bring in organic matter in the forms of, say, livestock manure or anything else that you could possibly add to improve the amount of carbon in that soil. And we've been doing some experimentation here looking at biochar, in fact, which is a very stable form of carbon. It's basically ground up charcoal. We're applying this to the soil, and this is helping to improve the amount of carbon which is stored in our soil. So, accepting that sandier soil will lose its organic matter quicker, we can do natural things within the rotation to build that up, or we can do unnatural things and bring in import carbon or organic matter to add to that pool to improve it.
Okay, and are these things that you guys are trialing at the Allerton project to establish a scientific basis on these theories?
Yeah, exactly. That's what the Allerton project is all about. We're a research and demonstration farm. Now we're clearly limited to the extent to which we can pursue this because we don't grow root crops. The soil is not suitable, and the scale of operation we don't have here. But what we're doing is we're testing those principles that I've just outlined to you. Because whether you're growing root crops or not, whether biochar is stable in the soil, how long it lasts, what it adds to the carbon pool will be common across soil types, regardless of cropping. So we can measure that kind of thing. And that then gives us an indication of how that technique might perform when grown with a root crop.
Okay, brilliant. And are you then, since the soil types aren't suitable at the Allerton project, are you then working with farmers off site to in areas of suitability to trial these kind of these theories?
Yeah, so we have done a little bit of work in the early days with McCain's, giving them advice on these principles and improving the amount of testing that we're doing. Because quite clearly, if you're going to adopt these techniques, you need to have a way of measuring whether they're having an effect and to what extent they're having an effect. So we put together some soil sampling kits and some instructions to provide farmers the equipment so that they could go out and soil sample. And this was particularly important where farmers were actually preceding the potato crop by growing cover crop. So a couple of things that we'll do there is we'll look at soil carbon before, during, and after the potato crop so that we're actually tracking what the carbon's doing. And we're also looking at biological activity within the crop. And we do that through something called the tea bag test. So this is essentially tea bags which contain organic matter. Tea leaves are made from leaves. We bury these in the soil, having weighed them at the outset. We leave them for a period of time. We exhume them from the soil, dry them out, and re-weigh them. And the loss of organic matter tells us how biologically active the soil is. The principle being that the more microbes you've got there, the more carbon they'll gobble up.
Brilliant. Yeah, I've heard in some places they use the pant test, don't they? They use cotton pants. Okay, that's great. And so going back to the kind of questions on rotation, how might one decipher what to include in that rotation and the role of different crops and cover crops and catch crops in relation to supporting the recovery of those soils after a root crop, and specifically to which root crop you're growing? Because obviously when we're talking about root crops, there's a huge list of root crops that we might be choosing from.
Yeah, I think we need to worry less about the list, the length of the list, actually, because practically the soil cultivations for each root crop are largely similar. So they involve intensive soil disturbance and creating a deep and fine tilth. Whether you're growing parsnips, carrots, potatoes, you'll need to do that. For me, the most exciting part of regenerative agriculture is this return to the restorative period within rotations. So traditionally, you know, if we only need to turn the clock back 20 years or so to see farms that were practicing wheat rape rotations, you know, in which you really are not having sufficient restorative periods during that. I mean, those rotations were helped enormously by a switch away from ploughing to min-till. There's no doubt about that. But you're still not getting that resting period that one would expect to see in the Norfolk four-course type rotation. So what I find really exciting is the availability of field-scale pollen and nectar mixes in countryside stewardship, or now SFI. So things like AB15, which are legume-rich lays, which the farmer can get paid to put in. So you grow these lays for 2 years and they build the fertility of the soil up, and then you return back into the rotation again. Now, for a lot of farmers, there is an assumption that if you bring lay periods back into a rotation, you also need to have some livestock in order to exploit those lay periods. Actually, you don't. And many years before I came to the Allison Project, I ran a really exciting and unique experiment looking at stockless organic farming. So this is where we grow these fertility building lays, but instead of grazing them with livestock and removing the nutrient which goes with the livestock, we're actually cutting and mulching these lays and composting the green material straight back to the soil and allowing the microbes to break it down and build the fertility up. Now, there's a great deal of advantage to adopting this approach. The problem with all arable farms bringing in livestock is they've either got to borrow the stock from a neighbour or they've got to set up their own livestock enterprise. And setting up a livestock enterprise on a farm which is currently all arable is an enormous task. You've got to think about all the fencing that's got to go in. You've got to supply water to the fields. You're then going to need a stockman to look after them, and he's probably going to need a house to live in. And you probably need an assistant stockman to look after the stock when he's on holiday. And then you've got a whole load of red tape to deal with. You've now got to have animal movements. You've got to have ear tagging and identification. You've got to keep a veterinary medicine register. You've got to pay attention to animal health and welfare. And you're going to have to abide by NVZ regulations because now you've got manure in the system. So this is onerous stuff when all you want to do actually is improve the fertility of the soil in the field. So I'm a real great advocate of replacing cattle and sheep with mowing machines and simply feeding the soil directly with the fertility building material.
I know, I've got two things on that. One, it always makes me chuckle when you see the frustration on an arable farmer's face when they get given a regenerative agricultural question of, well, where's the livestock and when are you going to get, you know, 1,000 sheep or, you know, 50 cows? And that's always lightens up my day a little bit. But I guess on you know, being devil's advocate or talking to a lot of livestock farmers, there is a huge amount of kind of, I guess there is scientific research, but then also a lot of philosophy about the livestock and the gut bacteria within the microbiome of livestock and the benefits that provides soil. So what are your sort of opinions on that? Because obviously a mechanical machine doesn't provide that sort of input.
No, that's absolutely right, though I don't think there's a great deal of science and knowledge about what that actually contributes. What we do know is that an animal's digestive system means that the digestible material gets digested and the indigestible material gets passed through the animal. And that material is a more stable form of carbon because it's been through a digestion process. And that is good for building up long-term carbon reserves within the soil. So there is definitely advantages to having livestock. I'm just sort of, you know, trying to flag up the the disadvantages that can arise from that, and say there's actually a halfway house here where we can get the benefits of a restorative rotation without the disbenefits of the livestock. But of course, you know, the Rolls-Royce system, if you are still a mixed farm and you are putting in temporary lays and rotating those with arable crops, that is the best system that you can run. But it's not for everybody.
So do you think, in that aspect, do you think the anaerobic digester would be able to replace the animal kind of microbiome and provide that? Do you think crop residues going into anaerobic digestion, then being reapplied to fields, would that be a suitable solution?
I'm not knowledgeable enough on that to be able to comment, other than to say that obviously a digester plant acts in a similar way to an animal's rumen, in that it is processing the more digestible material, and what you're left with again is the less digestible material, which will provide you with some more stable carbon. I suspect also there is some fairly available nutrients coming out of those processes too. So, you know, again, but going back to, you know, how you deal with those more difficult soils to build organic matter into, the best way to give an injection into those soils is to import, redistribute organic matter from another field onto the one where you have had to go through this very disruptive part of the rotation.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think farmers can do to prepare soil to grow? Is that an important part? That's obviously an important part of the rotation, having lays and stuff. But what practically can farmers do to prepare, if they maybe haven't grown root crops before, but prepare soils for growing root crops? And what practically can be done to manage root crops afterwards to promote a speedy recovery?
So all the major root crops are spring sown. And so if you're in an arable rotation and you haven't come from a lay period previously, you'll have the period through the winter before the root crop in which you can put a cover crop in. And that will take up some nitrate and it will fix some carbon in that crop. But there, you know, again, there are some cautionary tales here too, because that cover crop then has to be destroyed. Now, there is a theory that cover crops are useful because they put roots into the soil in the wintertime when the ground is wet, and they transpire that moisture out through the leaves of the cover crop, drying the soil out. My experience of cover crops is actually quite the opposite of that, because when the cover crops are not growing, which at this time of year they won't be, they're not actually transpiring anything. What they are doing is capturing moisture from the air on the leaves of the crop through condensation, and this is then dripping onto the soil, and then the soil doesn't dry out because it's covered by the cover crop, so any wind that's blowing across the ground is not actually drying the soil out. And I know this because we've done split field comparisons where we've grown half the field with a cover crop and half the field without, and we're always quicker to get onto the bare soil to drill the spring crop than we are where the cover crop has been. So you know, these are things that people need to be aware of, because it may, first of all, you've got to destroy that cover crop. Now, when you're subjecting the soil to intense cultivation as you are for root crops, that shouldn't really be a big problem. But you might be delayed in getting on with your cultivations because the ground is too wet, because the cover crop has held the moisture there. So, you know, these are things just to be cautious of. That cover crop, when it's destroyed, will start to release its nutrients. That's useful to the farmer. One of the reasons for soil sampling at that point is to try to work out how much nutrient the cover crop is providing to the subsequent root crop, and that allows you to deduct that from the fertilizer that you would apply, which again is another way of saving cost and reducing the carbon footprint of growing the crop.
So I know that you've got about 10 years experience managing an organic farm.
Yes.
Is that right? Prior to being at the Allerton project. To what extent do you think it's possible to maintain productive yields on regenerative organic root cropping farm? And what are the main challenges and opportunities associated with this?
Well, organic farming systems are regenerative by their very nature. That's the whole principle of an organic system. You're not able to bring in artificial nutrients. So all nutrients have to be cycled within the system and created within the system. The challenge for organic farming has been its reliance on intensive tillage to transition from one crop to the next in the absence of the ability to use herbicides. And so that means that one of the principles of regenerative agriculture, which is minimal soil disturbance, is difficult to observe within an organic system. But the requirement to have a restorative phase is fundamental in an organic system, whereas some regenerative farmers will still be too exploitative, in my view.
By continuing with a cash crop rotation.
Exactly.
Would you say that the philosophies that the trials that at the Allerton project are running at the moment, in theory with root crop production, are more similar to like an organic process?
Because of the nature of the farm here being a research and demonstration farm, we have some fields which are in a more restorative rotation than others, actually. Mm. So we don't have a kind of fixed rotation across the farm. We have been using, probably for nearly a decade now, we have been bringing some of the arable fields back in to rotational lays, originally just straightforward grass clover lays. So we've done some work with in the Sarek project looking at multi-species lays and what they can contribute. And now we've moved on to looking at the stewardship mixes like AB15 within the system. And I know, you know, that there are farms which have been traditionally completely arable without any restorative phases in the rotation at all, where they've now gone 50% wheat, 50% AB15. They grow wheat and perhaps follow it with a crop of oats or barley, and then go back into AB15. And they've been able to, you know, reduce their overheads massively by doing this, and simplify the management of the land.
Yeah, I mean, I guess from the kind of recent update on SFI, the AB, you know, AB15 and AB6, the payments are now nearly £600 per hectare. So it definitely makes it a more practical option.
If you want to de-risk your business, particularly with the challenges we're facing with climate change, our drilling windows are much tighter than they used to be, either because it's too wet or because it's too dry. De-risking your business by putting half your land into a guaranteed payment scheme. And while that land is guaranteeing your income, it's also securing your subsequent income because it's improving the quality of the soil and the fertility of the soil, which you can then exploit when you come to crop that land. To me, it makes an enormous amount of sense. However, you know, if we were to adopt such an approach on a national level, it would result in a substantial reduction in the amount of food that we're producing. You know, and that we mustn't lose sight of that as an issue.
Most definitely. So I just have a question here, which I think is important to bring up, which is kind of regarding pests and pathogens. And in what extent do you think the organic and regenerative philosophies of production and incorporating lays within your rotation, how can they help mitigate and buffer challenges such as PCN levels and other root crop pests and pathogens?
Well, any different crop will help to break life cycles of pests and pathogens. There was a lot of concern in the early years of switching to min-till that leaving trash on the surface would result in disease carryover to subsequent crops. And in fact, I published a paper on this in 2001 at the World Soils Congress in Madrid, where I looked at disease levels in intensely cultivated soils, ploughed soils, versus min-till, where the trash is at the surface. And I actually found no evidence for a problem here. The truth is, when conditions are good for disease spread, it doesn't matter whether you've got one spore available to germinate or a million spores. If the conditions are right for disease, then the disease will spread in those conditions. Pests and weeds are perhaps more problematic. Pests particularly, thinking of root crops coming out of a lay period, it's very likely that slugs are going to cause you an issue here. And again, you know, farmers get around this by creating a fine tilth in the root crop period, so they get good soil to crop contact. So think about a potato tuber encased with fine soil. The slugs will find it difficult to move through that in a way that they can move through a more cloddy soil. But the problem with creating that fine seed bed to protect the crop against slugs is you're going to use more diesel, and you're going to mineralize more of that organic matter, because you're going to have to work the soil harder to get the seed bed that you want. But these are all the things that we have to balance. Let's turn our attention now to weeds. Now, blackgrass, herbicide-resistant blackgrass, is a problem to most arable farmers. And this approach, where you have the restorative phase, is extremely useful at depleting weed seed banks that perpetuate through arable rotations. So when we come out of our AB15, and I make the point here, we're not growing root crops, so I can do this. We don't plow out. We put a low disturbance subsoiler through the field to take out any compaction that's occurred either through the livestock grazing the field or because we've been driving over it with a mowing machine. So low disturbance subsoiler goes through. We then go in with a direct drill, having sprayed off the sward with glyphosate, and we direct drill, and we are tending to use hybrid barley as the first crop in the rotation coming out of the lay period. And we do that because we know that blackgrass seed will survive up to 4 years, and we've only had two in the lay period. Obviously, when you're cutting in the lay period, you're topping the blackgrass before it sheds any seed, so you've got no build-up of the seed bank during that period. In fact, you're depleting the seed bank, but you won't deplete it to zero. And so there is still some blackgrass that will germinate in that hybrid barley. But hybrid barley is highly competitive. And in that point in the rotation, with the fertility coming from the pollen nectar mix previously, it will really give the blackgrass that's left a run for its money and smother it so that it doesn't produce so much seed. We will then follow that with a wheat crop. And because we haven't ploughed, the fertility leakage from that decaying pollen and nectar mix will extend across 2 years rather than the 1 year that you get when you plough, because you flush all that fertility out in one go. And much of it, I'm afraid, does get leached out if you have heavy rainfall like we've experienced recently.
So root crops are often grown on contract. How do you think regenerative root crops could work in practice, because obviously a lot of people who are growing root crops are growing it on either letted or tenured land, so there might not be that incentive to protect the longevity and the regenerative nature of the soil health.
This is the biggest challenge of all, because you require grade one or grade two land to grow this. Very often the specialist growers of root crop rely heavily on rented land. And very often that land is rented out to the highest bidder in each year without any thought being given to restorative periods. That is not universally the case, I will say. I know of one example where the grower of the root crops works in partnership with farmers, and they agree a rotation before and after the root crop period. And this and the farmer is obliged to abide by that rotation. And this means that we can then start to put restorative, regenerative practices into place. But that is one shining example that I know of. It's a very, very big producer that's doing that, and hats off to them. But by and large, the majority of land will be, as I've described, on one-year FBTs rented out to the highest bidder. And that is extremely difficult to practice regenerative agriculture upon.
Indeed. I guess that is where we go back to a previous thing that we've mentioned, is where the brands and the supply chains can really have a meaningful impact. And that's kind of where it does really have to come back to them at the end of the day.
Yes, I think, you know, we do have to rethink how we've treated our soils going forward. And this becomes more important as we grapple with the issues of climate change, because healthy soils are more resilient to dealing with wet and dry conditions. One of the fields here at the Allerton Project, we have not cultivated now for 14 years, and the earthworm numbers in the field have gone from 200 per square metre to 700 per square metre. Those earthworms are obviously recycling nutrient, which is helpful. But the most important thing they're doing is creating a porous soil structure through their burrows. They're creating a honeycomb, in effect, within the soil. And that means when it rains hard, that soil has a lot more airspace in it, which then becomes water space and takes up that water rather than it running off and creating erosion. And secondly, that then acts as a bigger reservoir so that the field is more resilient to deal with longer periods without rainfall when we have drought, for instance. It was noticeable in 2018 when we had a dry period during the summer that the crop of wheat growing in that field was the one that stayed the greenest the longest.
So I guess that the earthworms within your soil are the true livestock that you need.
Yeah, and we've not talked about this, but, you know, one of the most destructive things for earthworms is growing root crops. Not just the intensive ploughing, but the destoning operations. It's not great fun if you're an earthworm going across a destoning machine twice in a season, having already been ploughed. But here's, some recommendations which can be helpful with this. If you're going into your root crop, your potato crop, say, following a grass clover lay, then don't plough up the headlands. Leave the headlands in the grass clover lay. And that's actually very helpful with the harvesting operation, because you can drive on the headlands to harvest the potatoes from the field. But what that area will act as is a refuge for the earthworms. And they will then move out from that after the root crop and recolonize the rest of the field much more quickly than if you plow the whole field out and don't leave that reservoir behind. So that's one of the main ways in which earthworms will recolonize a field which has been through a root crop phase, is through immigration from the boundaries.
Fantastic. I think you have given us some absolutely insightful information here today. Since this is the Raise Farm of the Future podcast, I just want to leave you with one last question. If you were to predict what farms of the future look like in about 50 years' time, what would you expect to see?
Well, that's a very difficult question, because it depends on the farm. So I have a theory which I'm working on at the present time, which is there is some land that we're currently farming at the moment, which we should not be. And we're farming it because the post-war policy for society was for us to produce more food from our own land. And so even land which was marginal was worth farming because of the payments that were made. Those payments are disappearing. And so there is probably quite a lot of land which is unproductive, which could be repurposed into rewilding or nature or carbon storage or whatever. There are then farms like the Allerton Project here, which is partially marginal, where we will continue to crop the better land, but the less good land we will switch into nature, carbon sequestration, public goods, public services, those kind of things, renewable energy, that kind of thing. And then we'll have the productive farms. And there I see technology really ramping up, where we are producing our crops very, very high spec, you know, using robots using satellite data, lots of information going in and out as to how we manage those crops. And that's how I see the future of farming in this country going forward.
Well, brilliant. Thank you so much, Alistair, for all of your contributions today. It's been incredibly insightful for me and an absolute privilege. So thank you very much.
That was really interesting, and there was so much there, both the things relating to the root crops, but also the wider rotational sort of perspectives as well, which I certainly learned a lot from. I did enjoy hearing Alistair's perspective on using cutting and mulching of lays as a bit of a halfway house between, you know, the ideal of having livestock integrated into arable rotations, but also just the fact that that is not realistic for all farms. It was quite a sort of refreshing perspective to hear. And then also just everything he had to say on the rotational crop management side of it. And obviously root crops do deplete the soil, organic matter and the fertility, but hearing from Alistair about how to mitigate that prior to and during the root crops, that was really interesting and some good takeaways for me there. What did you think?
Yeah, certainly. I really value his opinions that, you know, regenerative agriculture is not prescriptive and it is very adaptable to the individual farm and farmer, as well as the supply chain. I at the end there, I thought it was particularly valuable, his thoughts on how contract farming is the thing that is, you know, most problematic in this sector of the industry, and the importance and the power that supply chains and brands have on interventions when it comes to the requirements of soil health and conservation. So yeah, absolutely fantastic conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us for the Farm of the Future podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard about today, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast, as we'd love to hear your thoughts and it will help others to discover it too. We'll be back next month to explore another exciting topic which impacts the future of farming.